Wow, broadcast box getting a little rough there. Hopefully it's going through clean on the stream and in the recording, because we're getting like the techno remix of our sound.
I was going to say, have you been messing with that?
No, I haven't touched it.
It sounds different.
Anyways, this is Pure Decking for Saturday, January the 10th, 2015. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like our current police state, information security, and the inappropriate uses of Snapchat. I'm Morps, and tonight I have with me a man who likes being number two in the human centipede, RU486.
Thank you.
We have the man who claimed if he had to have somebody's mouth sewn to his ass, Madman. We have someone who didn't get the questionnaire because he jumped in late, Suave, and someone who told me to fuck off when I asked him about the questionnaire, BSV.
There is no questionnaire.
So, BSV, what are you drinking?
My usual alcoholic apple is Angry Orchard.
Cool. Suave, what do you got?
It's lemonade.
What?
Alcoholic lemonade?
Yes. No, it's just regular lemonade. No alcohol in here tonight. But,
blasphemer! Damn. Alright, are you? What do you got?
Just water at the moment, but that may change at any time. I'd just like to point out, Madman's the only one here because BSV told you to fuck off, who's getting a bad deal out of this human centipede thing. Because technically, if I'm number two, he's number three.
Hey, I could be number one, damn it.
No, well, that was BSV. He's not participating. through the elimination of people, technically everyone's been promoted, unfortunately. Yeah, about your promotion. You're going to need you to stay back a bit this week.
What are you drinking, Madman?
Woodford Reserve on the rocks.
You need it.
Get the taste of shit out of my mouth.
The last thing you're going to be tasting for a while.
I realize the website is a bit behind. I'll fix that sometime. Yeah. About that.
Whenever.
Yeah, we'll get it fixed. So, if you're not, you should be listening live anyways. So, I am drinking a proper black and tan out of my... What mug is this? Wild Bill's Old Fashioned Soda Pop mug.
Did you make it yourself, or did you buy a black and tan in a can?
I said it was a proper black and tan. I'm hurt that you would even ask me that, Madman. This is Guinness Draft and Bass. The Guinness was poured over a spoon, damn it.
Okay.
I believe the word is triggered.
Wow. Going straight for the throat tonight. I open up the show with a light human centipede joke, and this is just where things go from here.
Did you have your lips sewed to an Australian man's ass?
Well, not recently.
Well, I'll make a black and tan joke, damn it.
Think about the horrible scarring. I mean...
Yeah, his ass will never be the same.
Trust me, it's not the same as it was when it started out either. It's ever evolving.
All right. So, let's get on to our discussion topic here of... you ever kind of wonder why some stuff is free? Things like proxies, VPNs, shells. Hell, I use a shell to connect to IRC, but... you ever kind of wonder about that? Look into why they're free?
I figure some of the proxies, they're just monitoring everything I do.
That's pretty close. I found an interesting post at blog.hackscheck.at, and this guy's obviously an Anon supporter, or possibly a member. He says he stumbled across a presentation of Chima Alsano at DEF CON 20, where he was talking about how he created a JavaScript botnet from scratch and how he used it to find scammers and hackers. Pretty much he made a squid proxy and he modified it so that all transmitted JavaScript files would hit an extra piece of code that does things like send all data entered in forms to the server. Then he set the caching time of the modified JS files to as high as possible. So, yeah. And don't think that if you're doing SSL over these things that that's secure either. SSL strip exists. But, he pointed out a couple of things that these free proxies could be doing. Of course, stealing your login information from sites, stealing your banking information if you buy anything, forcing you to participate in DDoS attacks by telling your browser to load a website a few hundred times a second in an iframe, see everything you're doing on the web, including mouse positions, etc. So, like what Madman was saying. Oh, and oh yeah, this blog post has instructions on building one of your own.
Nice.
So, if you're curious, there's that. But awesome. you stop and think about it. There's a lot of services. You just sign up an account; it's free, and you can use their website for stuff. And you know, servers aren't free. Software has to be maintained. Okay. And as somebody who's been trying to run a free website for a while now, it's hard. It's a pain in the ass. And just for clarification, Galaxy 15 is free because it's done for the personal entertainment of those running it, not because we care about anything else. Hence why I don't get too bent out of shape with the fact that the website's a month behind. So, but yeah, go ahead.
Your entertainment is just a byproduct.
I think we got to remember too, like, this doesn't mean that all free stuff is putting malware on your system.
Some of it's making money through advertising.
I'd actually like to see like a good audit, and if somebody could do like a sample of like, let's say, 1,000 free services, what percentage of those are serving up malware? I bet you it's probably in the single digit percentages.
Well, intentionally.
Even unintentionally, because like that, you know, that like it's not just like from some free service. A lot of the time, it's just from some ad network that's going on. So like, it's a legitimate free service. It's just they're making their money from ads that happen to be hijacked.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you think about things like how many people use Google or Yahoo or Microsoft for free email, right?
Yeah.
Hell, I've got a few Gmail accounts kicking around, and. You know, you don't really think about it because, oh, it's all automated. But that really does mean Google has access to all of your email. The only reason that they're not in there reading all your mail is because they promise not to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know, like, they are scanning through your email, like obviously through automated services. But, like, that's really all they want it for is for automated services to go through and do, like, market analysis and all this other stuff.
Well, sure,
crap.
That's been Google's. That's how Google operates. They don't they automate something and then just let it run.
Yeah.
So the whole point is to feed their systems data.
Mm-hmm. But you know, like they're analyzing your emails for a hell of a lot more than to tell them what ads to serve you. That's for sure.
Oh yeah, you know they're building profiles and.
Oh yeah, like okay, so now they know everything that you've bought online and everything like that, and like, yeah, the list goes on.
But, I mean, you know, that used to be the thing back, at least when I was in high school, for getting around web filters was to go to proxymyass.com, right? Or hide my ass, whatever the website was. And, you know, there were scripts out there for setting up your own, you know, bouncing through these little proxies, and these things were all over the place. And a lot of people set them up out of, you know, just curiosity to do it, maybe they had a political statement to make. So I guess that's something, you know, if you're going to use a free service, you want to look into it and understand why is that service free. So, well, they're showing you ads. Like, we understand why Google services are free. It's so that they can gather their information and, you know, show advertising and sell profiles to their business partners. And, you know, you either accept that or you don't, right? You don't accept that, you don't use their service. That's pretty simple, but... You know, if there's something out there, it's like, oh, here it is, it's free, and it's just, you know, you don't even question it. You just got to bounce everything through their servers. Like, things like, you know, here's a fun one, Dropbox. Why is Dropbox free? Well, Dropbox is free because they're trying to upsell you to their better service, right? But they're not showing you ads on your desktop running their little application. They're not inserting ads into your files. I think they might show you ads on the website if you go use the web interface, but I know most people don't use Dropbox for that. So I guess it's just something to consider. You know, if something is free, why is it free? You know, archive.org. I've got a story about them later in the show. What they're running is not cheap, bandwidth or storage or server wise, right? So
I would go with most things aren't free. You just have to ask who are their customers. You might be the product.
But that's certainly the case with Facebook, isn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's not free. You're just not the one purchasing anything. You're the product.
That's a good point. So that's really all I wanted to point out. It's if you ever hit something sketchy and it's just free and you can use it and it seems too good to be true, look at it and see why, or at least try to figure it out. And if you can't find anything about why the service is free, like, you know, we're showing you ads, we're trying to upsell you to our premium services, we have a political statement to make, which is what Archive is. You know, hell, Linux. Why is Linux free? Linux is free because they had a political statement to make, and a lot of people really liked the open source methodology. So, but Linux is not really a company. They're communities that build distros, and then there's companies that build distros. So Ubuntu is one that scares a lot of people right now because they've got a lot of money put into something that they're not charging for. And you can see, you know, if you go back and what Ubuntu's done, you can see a couple of failed attempts at monetization. So that one's got several people worried right now from a privacy standpoint. You know, hell, they tried pumping everybody's desktop searches through Amazon a little while back.
Yeah.
I think it still does it by default, doesn't it? On Unity?
Wouldn't be surprised. I remember hearing something about that. And, you know, I kind of understand that. Like, you know, you do have to make money. It's just...
No, I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying you need to understand why is something free.
Yeah.
And whether or not you're okay with using that service. Like Madman says, you know, you're not the customer, you're the product. Does that bother you?
Yeah.
And in some cases it may, in some cases it may not.
The reason you want to look is, if you can't see why it's free, then that's the ones that are most likely to be doing malware on your system or using your system for a nefarious purpose. If I'm the product, then I know how they're making money. It's just they're selling all my shit. Am I cool with what I'm putting on this website being known to the entire planet? Because that's what's going to happen to it.
Yeah.
And the other nice thing about that is, if you understand why something is free, like the Facebook thing, like Madman was just saying, you know, maybe that's not the best place to put your naked pictures, because unless you want everyone to get those, because you just have to accept that anything you put on that website could potentially be shot out everywhere, which means that your usage of that service will probably be, I mean, if you understand what they're, you know, what the, how the company running operates, your uses of that service will be more appropriate.
Right.
So.
Yeah, definitely knows or pays to know what you're getting into when you're getting into these free services, that's for sure.
Yeah, so I guess it's almost the PSA of, you know, try to understand why something is what it is. You know, if you go to this, you know, super awesome thing that lets you, you know, get free music 24/7, you might look into why you're getting that stuff for free. Well, Pirate Bay was to show you ads, right? Kazaa, it was so they could mine your systems and do... who was it that was doing cloud computation on everybody's machines? It was one of the file sharers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember now.
iTunes got nailed doing that too, actually. They were doing some distributed computing product with iTunes, and it was running people's machines down, and they finally figured out what the hell was going on, and Apple backed off. But I
kind of wonder what they were computing now.
Hard to say.
Look, I mean, it's Apple. I know people that do the Siri project as like a desktop background.
Sure. But I don't know, man. They never really out and out said what it was. But that's just something to keep in mind with all this stuff. When you can get a piece of software that's free, you need to look and see, why is it free? Oh, it's open source. It has to be free because of the methodology of the development. Well, I don't guess open source software has to be free, but it's generally not practical to try to charge for it. So. Huh. I don't know. kind of beaten that one into the ground, haven't we?
Yep, I think the discussion may be over.
Okay, cool.
All signs indicate so.
All signs point to yes. That's just need to get a magic eight ball and keep it here for the show. Is it going on too long? Signs point to yes. Okay.
Consult a friend. I love that one.
Ask again later. Okay, then. Well, now.
That means we keep going, guys.
All right. First story up, and it's hilarious, is from the BBC. There was no precedent for how to deal with a hacking attack on the scale that hit Sony Pictures, its chief executive has said. No precedent at all, huh? You know, like when it happened to your exact same company 2 years ago, no precedent at all? Really? Michael Lynn said his firm had no playbook on how to respond. In a wide-ranging interview with the Associated Press, he described the scale of the attack, which U.S. government has blamed on North Korea, wrongly.
I'm not having that debate again.
No, we're not, but it's just hilarious. But one security expert said that Sony should have spotted the danger and prepared contingency plans. Lighten said immediately after the attack came to light, his company scrambled to restore communications, digging out old phones and working out how to pay for stuff with paper checks. We are the canary in the coal mine, that's for sure, he told the Associated Press. There's no playbook for this. Bullshit! Excuse me. So if you are, in essence, looking at the situation as it unfolds and making decisions without being able to refer to a lot of experiences you've had in the past or other people's experiences, you're on completely new ground. Bullshit. Excuse me. I don't know where that keeps coming from. And he told the agency that of the scale of the data loss his company has suffered, they came in the house, stole everything, burned the house down, they're destroying the servers, computers, wiped them clean of all the data, and took all the data.
Did everything but hack the Gibson, man.
Yeah. He insisted his firm was adequately prepared, but just not for an attack of this nature, which he said that no firm could have withstood.
Wow.
After a series of embarrassing leaks, the hackers threatened further attacks over Sony's film's picture of the interview, blah, 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 several cinemas, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So the short version of it is that Sony Pictures has claimed, or the CEO has claimed, that nothing like this has ever happened before in the history of man, and they could not have been prepared for it, and no one's ever could have been prepared for it.
Wow.
Didn't Sony just get a huge hack like this 2 years ago?
Yes.
On their PlayStation Network?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, they did.
Xbox has been compromised. WoW has been compromised.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, doesn't this kind of breach happen? Oh, wait, Home Depot had a breach of this magnitude.
Oh, and, Target. Oh, yeah,
Target, Marshalls, P.F. Chang's. Huh?
Dude, everyone's
like, nobody's safe. Yeah. You know, it's pretty much at the point where if somebody like or an organization really wants to target a big organization like that, they can. Like,
so
that's what it seems like anyways, because like you just like look at all those huge names you just listed off. Like that's
off the top of my head. I didn't even pulled up a list.
The, you know, they can't be using that good of security, or it must be very difficult to have good security, which I guess it would be.
They're not using good security because good security practices annoy the employees and annoy the customers, so they just don't get used.
The thing is, it is difficult to do proper information security at scale. Once you get more than about 100 employees, keeping proper information security management going is insanely difficult because it's an inconvenience. You have to store everything in certain manners. You have to manage credentials, and you have to maintain least access, which, as somebody who's done this enough, I can tell you what happens is you know, if you're trying to do security properly, you will have a manager at some point step in and say, just fucking give them the access they need to do this. Or don't, you know, or just open it up. Just make it work. Yeah. Because they're working on a deadline and they don't see the risk in it. Or if you try to explain the risk to them, they just, you know, put their fingers in their ears and wave you off and blah, 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 not listening, don't care. And then when they get hacked, they go to the IT guys and say, what the fuck, man? It's like, well, you told us to do it this way. Well, I didn't tell you to do it that way. I told you, I've seen it happen in management way too often.
Oh, yeah.
Where management comes in, they want it done. They want it done right now, and they want it done in the stupidest manner possible.
It's an age-old problem of somebody making the decisions about something they know nothing about.
Well,
it's not always that. Sometimes it is, what are the odds of us being targeted? What are the potential losses? And between now and then, what are the gains of ignoring this? I hate to say that that comes into play, but that comes into play.
Oh, that absolutely comes into play. That's called risk management. You look at the risk, you look at the potential if that risk happens, and you weigh it out. This is why you have massive corporations that commit tax fraud regularly. It's because they've done the math and said, well, if we commit the tax fraud, we make X. If we get caught, it will cost us Y. If we play the game properly by the rules, it's going to cost us Z. If X minus Y is greater than Z, they're going to do tax fraud. It's the exact same thing. The problem is, though, that with information security, because a lot of management making that same risk judgment can't look at numbers on a page. They have to kind of guess. They make the judgment very, very wrongly every time. that's why the CEO of Sony is saying, there's no way we could have been prepared for this. Bullshit, you could have been prepared for this. This happened to your company 2 years ago. They just didn't realize how bad it could get.
Yeah,
they were just thinking, so some people get into our computers. So what?
They probably thought they were over the worst of it.
Yeah.
Like, this is the worst it could possibly get.
Only happens
I'm
once.
Absolutely certain.
They also didn't properly segment their systems. If you could get both into what is their gameplay system? Sony Live or whatever? No, that's Xbox
PlayStation
Live.
Network.
PlayStation Network and also the employees' files with the same hack, I'm thinking there's some fucked up there.
Now that's interesting, Madman, that you bring up network segmentation, because I know that you do not direct... I mean, you work on a computer all day, but you are not, quote-unquote, in IT.
Well, I know that my access to certain files should be limited to just what my job requires me.
That's the only way to privilege.
Yeah, the only way to properly do that is to also limit my computer's access to what it needs to know.
That's just interesting that I hear you bringing up network segmentation, because that's an argument that's hard to win with management.
I'm a manager. It shouldn't be. That's what my credentials are in and most of my experience. It shouldn't be. I don't know why it is.
It's because you have to rip and replace most of the network to do that, and it's a pain in the ass to set up.
I guess if you're doing it from the beginning of your company, you're good. But going back and retroactively fixing it would be expensive.
Well, that's the problem, right? I mean, you're looking at these networks that were designed 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago. And, you're trying to come in and slap some security on top of this. It's sort of like trying to, unplug the toilet when the house is on fire to steal from another security show I listen to. you really do need to rip down the house that's about to fall down anyways and replace it with something sturdy. Because, I mean, we've all seen that picture of the do not enter sign, the locked gate, and no fencing around it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing.
Depending on the companies, sometimes it's worth it. I'm not sure Sony would be. It's an entertainment company. Yeah,
it's an entertainment company that processes an amazing amount of people's payments per day. Think about the kind of money that flows through that company. Go ahead, are you?
Oh, no, I was just thinking, well, they make a ton, dude. I'm thinking Steam.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Valve would be a prime target. But if you think about Valve, they're probably not that big of a company. They don't have that many offices. What, one, two?
I have no idea.
They probably don't have that many employees. The upside to the internet is, and the way they do distribution is, you don't need people. Your computer exactly. will do it.
So if you think about it, a small-scale company like that would be easier to do information security for. I honestly think it would be easier to do information security for Steam than it would be to do it for any major bank.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Because Steam is probably, sure they've got servers everywhere, but it's probably a small office. They've got a back-end system, and once you get done, getting some OPSEC, basically, installed in their network, you get with their programmers, get through the code, and I imagine the Steam back-end code is probably not that complicated. It's mostly a fancy web browser.
Yeah, so that's exactly what it is.
You know, I imagine what they've coded on top of it is not... I mean, don't misunderstand, a web browser is an insanely complex thing to code, but I don't think that Valve has probably written most of that code. They've probably taken open source...
From what I understand, it's based on another browser, isn't it?
Well, that would be the thing, is you go grab one of the open source libraries. Hell, let's just go, I've got Steam up. I wonder where they should have licensing somewhere for their software. Legal information. Here we go. Blah, 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 blah. Third-party notices, claims copyright infringement. Looking for legal about Steam itself. I don't know. This is a research project. Go figure it out. But I assume that they've picked up, and it'll be somewhere in their legal, what open source project that they've used, or maybe closed source. Maybe they bought it. I don't know. But I imagine they've got a library that they've been building on top of, probably WebKit or something like that, right? That they've been building on top of. So getting their backend system cleaned up probably wouldn't be that bad, truthfully. When I say most banks, though, the reason I say that is they have a long established system and way of doing things, and a lot of them are still running AS400s. So somewhere on their backend system, things got a clear text terminal session to their server somewhere, right? And it's not because they don't want to do it securely, it's because they don't want to spend, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to completely re-engineer their infrastructure.
They spend hundreds of millions of dollars making computers that will emulate old software and hardware.
Yeah, they're still running code that was written in the 70s, I believe. So.
The banking industry still runs COBOL.
Yeah, they're running on an AS400. That's not surprising. So, anyways, let's. Next story here is from the CBC. CBC.ca, actually. The Canadian Broadcasting Company. I should clarify that. The CBC could be a few other things. Or the CDC. but by today's standards, classic MS-DOS games like Castle Wolfenstein and Lemmings seem rather rudimentary in terms of how they look on screen. A young Xbox One player today might scoff at the pixelated stylings of Prince of Persia for the Apple II, but computer games from the late 80s and 90s hold a special place in the hearts of anyone who grew up in or discovered PC gaming around that time. If you can remember playing Commander Keen on your school's computer lab or on rainy days trying to avoid dying of dysentery while traveling around the Oregon Trail on a Commodore, or purposely trying to become friends with that kid in your class whose dad had Maniac Mansion on his Mac, you'll understand what the author means. You might also be thrilled to learn that you can recreate all this stuff. Archive.org put 900 coin-operated arcade games from the 70s and 80s and 2,300 classic MS-DOS games on its website, and they've got it all playable in the browser.
All I have to say is Scorched Earth.
Yes! That somebody else who understands!
All I have to say is word 6 on page 8, paragraph 3 of the owner's manual.
Shut up, man.
Oh, Swamp.
Yes, the authenticity is there.
We were looking at this at work, and I said, ooh, do they have Scorched Earth? And a couple of the other guys looked at me like, why?
Best game ever. I remember coming home at lunches and stuff like that to go like play it against my friends and everything. It was awesome.
Oh, we had a disc we had rigged it up to run on, and I don't remember where we got the full version of it from because nobody bought it. But we had the full version of it floating around a floppy disk, and would load it up on school machines and get like four or five people around it and just go nuts, right? We'd always tweak the economy and screw with the physics and all this other shit you could do. Somebody let off a nuke, it takes out most of the map. Love that game.
Yeah, I remember I got it. It was on one of those, like, you know, $5 discs that you could buy in like 3.5 floppy. It's like 15 games in one. It was always in one of those.
It was a great game.
Yeah.
But yeah, we were searching through that last night and found some interesting ones as well. But yeah, the copy protection in some of those games is still there, so it might ask you to go find the manual for the game. Although I'd imagine you could probably Google most of them and find the answers.
Yeah, you probably could.
So.
But really, yeah. Let's throw a banana and see if we can blow up a building.
Yeah. I remember screwing with the code in Gorillaz and making it so that it didn't matter. The banana was going straight up. Stupid shit like that. Oh, that's great. Great fun.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, too, if you're, you know, broke and need something to play, it's all free. And, you know, if you show it to somebody who complains about why what it looks like, it's like, well, that's just the way it is, man. Games from that era. But, I mean, you look at it, some of them, you know, some of those classic games really worked to look good, even though they were on, you know, Pixels and Commodore and shit like that, you know?
Oh, yeah.
The first cutscene was in Pac-Man.
That's true.
Or was it Miss Pac-Man? It was either Pac-Man or Miss Pac-Man.
It might have been Miss Pac-Man.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which is actually from the same era that it might be on that website.
I've got huge props for the Internet Archive that's doing this.
It's the Internet Archive.
Yeah. Archive.org, yeah. You know, like, just making all of these things available for posterity. Okay, so there, we could bring that back to the previous conversation. Why are they doing this?
They're doing it because they have a political statement to make. I've talked to Jason Sagat before.
Oh, okay.
And it's literally, they believe that that somebody has to catalog this stuff because otherwise it'll just disappear. And that's true.
Yeah.
If you go look, like, how much stuff is still floating around from the old BBS era?
Mm-hmm.
If you, a lot of it's on textfiles.org, but, you know, there, again, Jason Scott put together a fantastic set of movies documentaries about BBSs, you know, following the early days and then through when most of them were shutting down. And a lot of them were shut down because the hardware they were running on died.
Right.
Because you're leaving a computer going 24/7, which for some of those classic machines, they wouldn't care because, like, you ever pull apart a Commodore and look at it, you can work on them with a soldering iron and legitimately get shit done. Now, I'm not saying you can't do modern computers with a soldering iron, but it's a lot harder. Surface mount chips versus discrete parts. And so I imagine you could probably let one of those things chug away all day long, but the disk drives for the thing are crazy fragile. So, you know, how many of them ran on, like, you know, SCSI drives and tapes?
Oh, I'm sure you can just find a driver for an SD card reader for, it'd be no problem.
Totally, at the time?
Totally doable. Never mind.
Sure, I've got an SD card for my Commodore today, but right. At the time?
Oh, okay, yeah.
The problem isn't, like, for example, I used, you know, I had a 1541 drive for my Commodore, and when I dropped it and it just died, I was devastated because I can order another one off eBay and it might work, or yeah, it might just chew through any disk I shove in it. And the way I got the first one working was I ordered two broken ones off eBay and put it together.
Awesome.
It was a pain in the ass to get one of those things working again. And so if you look at it, And this is absolutely true. My grandmother is going nuts right now because she wants to buy a new laptop. And most of the ones in stores don't have a DVD drive. And I don't know why she's so concerned about this, but she is. She really wants to make sure she has one. And I even asked her, do you even use them that much? She said, well, no, but I just want to be able to if I need to. And she doesn't want an external one. So you think about it. I mean, my big gaming rig has one, but that's just because I keep putting the same one I've had forever in my computer. I haven't bought a new DVD drive in, geez, forever. But
my laptop's not that old, and it came with one.
Right, but if you've been in the stores lately, they're all super thin and don't have them.
Oh, they're going for, this is like 2 pounds, and I went for, I don't care the weight. I want to play every fucking video game I know of.
True.
That's
but,
the way I
mean,
I looked at it, Mad Men.
I don't disagree. I'm just using this as an example.
Yeah.
This one's not completely out of the way yet. Okay, let's go for one that's out of the way. How many modern machines have a floppy drive?
Or a zip drive. I think floppy drives lasted longer. I think they even outlasted the zip drive.
I remember when I was so utterly amazed by the zip drive. I thought it was just so revolutionary.
I just remember using it to install Windows on a machine that didn't have a CD drive.
I remember using it to watch Mystery Men.
Wow.
I know what he's talking about. That's hilarious. I've forgotten about that.
I think you were the one that started passing those copies around, maybe.
I was.
And then later on a modern system, we never compiled them to a single folder. I had to find them individually.
We split up movies to put them on zip disks and pass them around. It was hilarious. So.
Old school piracy there, kiddies. Granddad knows what he's talking about.
No, old school piracy is putting scotch tape over your cassette over your cassette so you can copy it.
Yeah.
Well, I got smart and put the scotch tape over the little pin in my cassette player.
Yeah.
Oh. Didn't even think about that.
Piracy plus tight arseness. Saving on all that tape.
I remember back in the day doing all the downloads and stuff like that. Like anything you downloaded that was like half decently big, it was all like zipped up in individual RAR files that would all fit on a 3.5 floppy disk.
Yeah, the 30 some odd RARs you'd have to download to get one thing.
They did it like that for a while.
Oh, they kept doing it for a long time. Yeah,
it kind of became the standard, I guess.
I know people that don't know what floppy disks are.
Yeah, isn't that sad?
Yeah, they just call it the save button now.
Yeah.
Go ahead, BSV.
I'm just used at people not knowing. But then again, yeah.
Well, if you've never been exposed to it, I mean, floppy disks kind of disappeared 10, 15 years ago now, give or take.
Right, maybe not 15. Nobody who can get their hands on a floppy right now.
Without moving? Or can I stay in my room?
On your desk right now.
Okay, no.
No.
You win.
Okay.
It's in a box in the corner.
They're in the
there.
Other room.
My floppy's actually under my gun right now.
I've got some 5.25 floppies that are still in their cellophane packaging.
I've got some,
opened.
Too.
Nice.
And they
you know what they're mainly used
be.
For today?
Coasters.
Yep, hipsters use them for coasters.
Wall art.
Yeah, totally useless.
That's a CD that you need to get rid of in a blank sheet of paper.
That's a trend I'd like to see coming back. Hanging the old CD off your rear vision mirror. Great trick.
Oh, yeah.
My grandmother, who is actually moderately tech savvy, she was really sad when CDs stopped being a common thing, when they stopped sending her free AOL CDs. And I said, well, why? She said, because we'd just hang them up on strings in the backyard and it would scare birds away.
Wow. They said the older generation is not very environmentally friendly, man. Recycling.
Bunch of fucking hillbillies in my family, man. Anyways.
That is great. No, that's multi-purpose. You're cool. Upgrading AOL, and then you're getting birds away from your garden all at the same damn time.
It's actually probably the most efficient thing AOL's ever done.
Thanks to AOL, there is a plethora of CD-related crafts that have been developed. And I'm not even joking. Like, there's all kinds of things that people have made with AOL CDs.
Is plethora the word of the day on your calendar, Major? And you just, like, worked it out a way to get it in?
No.
Isn't it plethora?
Yeah.
Or is it this a Canadian thing?
Well, I think it's the same word. He's just saying it differently.
Yeah, okay. It's probably me just reading the word a lot and not saying it in conversation very much.
Well, to be fair, Madman and I both always heard it pronounced plethora because we had a school administrator decide that that was the word to use in every sentence possible. But nobody was actually sure if he was saying it right or not, so you could be wrong.
It's pronounced leviosa.
God damn it.
And conversation over. Next story.
Yes.
Next story is from the Washingtonian.com. A suburban Washington Comcast office maintained a detailed list of influential customers, including local government officials, business leaders, and a congressional field office, according to a 2005 lawsuit and a person familiar with the case. The legal documents show that as of 2005, Comcast Cablevision of Potomac kept a highly sensitive and confidential list of subscribers, including targeted lists of hundreds of the best, highest revenue producing, highest profile, or most satisfied customers known as Platinum VIP or Happy Customer lists. A footnote in the Comcast legal filings defined these VIP subscribers as customers who may be an elected official, public figure, or other person of importance. A person familiar with the case said the VIP list consists entirely of customers in Montgomery County, Maryland, including local mayors, city council members, heads of major corporations, leaders of civic organizations. No members of Congress appeared on the list, according to person familiar with the case, though one congressional field office did. Comcast spokesperson declined to explain why such VIP lists were compiled and whether or not they're still doing it. Comcast does not and has not offered special service perks or free upgrades to lawmakers or public officials. So basically Comcast got caught keeping a list of people not to piss off and to give good service to. This is why you see Comcast repeatedly voted one of the worst companies ever, but you rarely ever see a journalist or a politician get mistreated by them to the point that they do anything about it.
And that's the sound of people agreeing with you.
That's totally crazy. I never would have even dreamed that they'd do something like that. Like, I'm not surprised, but I never really would have thought about that.
Well, it's
that's what you get with a government-enforced monopoly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually company policy, and probably still is, to public figures, politicians, journalists. They don't say it, but you know it was journalists. Basically, anyone who could make a problem for them if they treated them like shit over the phone or messed up their bill, they got nice, nice treatment. Whereas, any other regular schlub who calls in trying to get shit done with him gets, it's like, no, we've got you by the short and curlies, and we're going to do whatever the hell we want.
Yep.
Surprising no one, but fun to point out.
It'll happen again.
Yeah, any government-enforced monopoly. Or all of them.
Well, hell, Madman, you've worked help desk. Most of us have worked help desk. You always had a list of people that it was an unofficial list, but it was like, if this person calls in, you just do whatever the hell they want.
Due to some regulations, I have happily pissed off people with $100 million houses. And they were like, pass me up to your supervisor. And I knew my supervisor was going to piss them off too because it was illegal not to.
Nice. And to be fair, like they're able to, see what the number is that's coming in. So all they really need is a list. that automatically shunts those numbers to like special care, so you know they don't get the hold times and everything like that. So nobody needs to know that you know they have a special list. It could all be automated, and they just give one group of CSRs special training, and you know have more of them available. Yada yada yada. And
that really goes straight to a pseudo management office that's like going to give them whatever the hell they want.
Yeah, but it's just, I guarantee it's just like an automated shunt. Like, none of the regular customer service reps would know anything about that for sure. Those calls would never even make it to them.
I think you're giving them way too much credit, because that would cost more money.
No, it wouldn't. Dude, I used to work for Singular Wireless, one of their big call centers, and that's sort of stuff they did all the time with, like, problem customers and stuff like that. Their customer care calls would sometimes get automatically shunted to like supervisors' desks and stuff like that, or to their like resolution department, they called it.
When I was on Time Warner Cable, I think they had my name put on a list to go straight to second level, because they figured out really fucking quick I knew what I was on about, because they tried to bullshit me a couple times on the phone when I called them on it.
Oh yeah.
So I don't know if that was because they thought I was being a dick, or if they just thought, okay, he knows what he's on about. We can't cheat him. Like, no, that's not how DSL works. I understand exactly how DSL works. So, like, some AT&T salesmen came to my apartment door a little while back. It's like, yeah, we're offering fiber with 10 megabit straight to your door. 10 megabit on fiber, really? That's it.
Like, why are you throttling me so much?
It's really low grade.
But by fiber, we meant two guys with flashlights outside your window.
Couldn't actually afford fiber optic cables, so we just buried a bunch of beer bottles.
It kind of works.
Damn, Bob, right. Turn the light on.
Next one up is from v3.co.uk. Microsoft is to stop providing free Patch Tuesday notices to non-Premier customers in a move labeled by some as an assault on IT teams. The change refers to the advanced notification service that provides organizations with information about upcoming Patch Tuesday releases. ANS gave businesses the chance to assess how the updates could affect their systems and stop any update that could cause problems. However, Chris Betts, senior developer of Microsoft Security Response Center, has said in a blog post that the company believes the majority of customers do not need ANS information and let the updates happen automatically. That's right, Microsoft is telling you just let it happen. Customer feedback indicates
it'll
that
be overseen.
Many... What'd you say, Swole?
Nothing.
It will be over soon.
And then we've just got to restart you. And then turn you back on again.
Customer feedback indicates that many of our large customers no longer use ANS in the same way they did in the past due to optimized testing and deployment methodologies, he said. While some customers still rely on ANS, the vast majority wait for Update Tuesday or take no action, allowing updates to occur automatically. As a result, ANS will be made available only to those paying for the privilege, who will provide ANS information directly to Premier customers and current organizations involved in our security programs, and will no longer make this information broadly available through a blog post and web page, said Betts. The decision drew anger from some in the security community, like me. Ross Barrett, senior manager of security engineering at Rapid7, was scathed about the decision. This is an assault on IT and IT security teams everywhere. Making this change without any lead-up time is simply oblivious to the impact this will have in the real world. Microsoft is basically going back to the message of just blindly trust that we will patch everything for you. Honestly, it's shocking. And I happen to agree with Rapid7 on this one. This is stupid. Pretty much, yeah. The whole bend over and take it mentality here is a problem.
Yeah.
This is something I have to deal with professionally, which means I'm going to have to reschedule my entire update deployment system and piss a bunch of people off.
Yeah.
We don't know if Windows will break our system anymore. Because I know they don't test for every application that runs in every industry that runs Windows.
Well, they can't. It's not practical. Which
I don't think it's possible.
No, but that's the thing. What this ultimately is going to mean is either patches are going to be deployed late, because there's not an IT team out there that, in their right mind, is just going to let updates happen automatically unless they're not running anything except Windows, Internet Explorer, and, you know, Microsoft Office. If they're running anything outside the standard Microsoft builds, which all probably work, you know, any custom software, any deployment like that, you're just going to see people not patch.
Yeah, so pretty much every business.
Yeah, they're just not going to patch it. They're going to patch way late. So this is going to lead to a lot more systems getting compromised. This is going to lead to a lot more systems simply not getting fixed. And, yeah, I'm going to have the fun conversation with my boss of, look, I've got to change how our updates are deployed because I can't see what they're going to be before they're released, which means we're going to be, we're going to have stuff that's not fixed for longer. So, yeah, it's stupid on Microsoft's part, because it really is the bend over and let us, it'll be over soon, as Swaff said.
It's them trying to just sell that product that they were initially giving away for free.
Probably.
And now we're going to find out how elastic is that price.
Honestly, they'll probably end up being free once they realize that companies just aren't going to patch. Well, why aren't you patching? Because we can't see what the patches are going to be, and we can't test them. Well, we offer this service. Yeah, that's not in our budget.
That would be an inelastic price for everyone keeping track at home.
I went to business school.
All right. Next one up is from torrentfreak.com. The major movie studios are considering lawsuits against hosting providers in the U.S. and abroad. The MPAA specifically mentions the Dutch host LeastWeb as a potential target, claiming that it frequently does business with pirate websites. LeastWeb was surprised to be mentioned as a potential target and is not aware of any wrongdoing. The what now? I love that. LeastWeb was like, we're doing what now?
Don't worry, you'll find out when we take you to court or have the FBI raid you in a different country.
Last month, a leaked document from the MPAA exposed Hollywood global anti-piracy priorities for the coming years. The leak revealed how movie studios would focus their efforts, with file hosting and streaming sites among the top targets. The same data breach also included a more in-depth overview of the anti-piracy plans, which were previously unreported. The new leak comes from the email the MPAA sent to the movie studio's top executives October of last year and provides additional background. One of the MPAA's main anti-piracy priorities are file hosting services, often referred to as cyber lockers. As part of the strategy to deal with these threats, the movie studio plans to sue the site's hosting providers. So, I guess to clarify, if somebody didn't like the content Galaxy 15 was playing, they could try to sue Galaxy 15, which would be laughable because none of us have any money. So instead,
yes,
they go sue the people I'm buying servers from.
Right.
And that's like suing the gun manufacturer that someone used to kill someone with the gun.
No, that's more like suing the steel company because the gun manufacturer used steel in their gun.
Perfect sense. I can't see this failing in court whatsoever.
What's sad is it might not fail in court. That's the very sad thing.
Yeah. Dutch Web is named as one of the possible targets.
Need beer now, madman. Thanks.
The MPAA also leaves open the option to go after recalcitrant hosts in the United States if they choose not to cooperate. Yeah, so the MPAA wants to be able to go in and tell a hosting company, no, we don't like that website, shut it down. And if they don't shut it down, we're going to sue you.
So my question is, when are people just going to be fed up enough that we sue the MPAA into oblivion?
I don't think it'll be a lawsuit. I think it'll be more of a torches and pitchforks kind of scenario.
Tomato, tomato.
I'm not sure it's going to happen. They still have an internet connection. if enough people got pissed, I think there would be a continuous DDoS attack on everything listed for those companies.
In addition, the MPAA plans to make criminal referrals against hosting companies, accusing them of money laundering and conspiracy to commit copyright infringement. Okay.
So isn't that making fraudulent claims?
I believe so. Because here's the fun part. You know, we were using Galaxy 15 as an example a minute ago. I can promise you the hosting company has no knowledge of what we do with the website. Okay? They could go look. But when I signed up and set up the website, there was a legal agreement on there saying I was agreeing I wasn't going to do anything illegal with the hosting. That's right. Pretty much it. So if this seriously makes it to court, I'm sure LeastWeb is going to pull out a EULA very similar to that, saying, look, we ask right here. You say you're not doing anything illegal when you sign up for your service. We can't help that you're lying. You know, and if you notified us that they were breaking their agreement, we would have shut them down. But no, instead you start a lawsuit. So, yeah, this is... Honestly, this is a sign of desperation. This is, we can't stop people from setting these things up. They spring up too fast, so we have to go after the services themselves.
The way you fix it, you, one, change your business model, and then, two, put out shit that I want to buy. I own every Marvel animated movie and DC animated movie. Yes, I'm a nerd. But the reason I own them isn't because I can't watch them for free. I watch them, most of them, for free before I purchase them. I buy them because I want them to keep making those damn movies.
Yes.
If there's
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I wouldn't have purchased it. The only reason I own it is someone handed it to me.
Were they running out the store at the time really fast?
It was a white guy, so no.
Nah, I lost track. That was pretty much roughly the same thing of people actually buy stuff that they like. Most people don't like to check it out because, oh, there's a lot of crap being shoveled at us nowadays.
Garbage out there.
Yeah, that really hurt the music industry when once they figured out people could go online and check out an artist before actually paying for it.
See that the album actually has more than one good song?
Yeah.
You'd think so, but you still have all of these like formulaic bands making tons of money, so there's just that.
But getting back to the piracy thing there, the simple fact is, for me anyway, that there are no streaming systems I can pay for here in Australia. They are going to offer, what's that one you guys use?
Netflix,
but it's going to be twice the price and half the content. So that's a definite no on that one. And I can't rent the videos or buy the, well, if that's all, the DVDs or buy the DVDs because a lot of the films I'm watching has come straight out of a Sundance Film Festival or something like that. And they never get a decent release until that 2 years later. I don't want to wait 2 years for, you know, an indie film.
And that's the part Madman was saying about changing their business model.
Hmm.
Yeah. I would go straight legitimate streaming if more content could be done that way. Because it's not even a, I believe it's the correct thing to do, which I will even concede it is. But PrimeWire, I have connectivity issues. Their servers sometimes suck.
They do. That's the price you pay, man.
Yeah, but if Netflix had everything, I would pay them even more money than I'm already paying them.
What does Netflix charge?
$8.
I've got the cheap one. It's like $8.
Was that a month or a year?
A month.
A month.
That's not bad.
But I'll be willing to pay a lot more if, I don't know, they start streaming the movie the moment it goes into the theater.
Yeah.
Instead, that's one of the nice things about things like PrimeWire is, you know, the show aired that you wanted to watch, or the movie, it's on the air, as opposed to waiting. Well, like on TV shows, it's like usually a year before the stuff gets released on DVD or something.
You watch it a season behind if you're watching it on Netflix.
Really? You know, watching...
Give or take.
See, they tried that shit here in Australia with Game of Thrones. And Game of Thrones' first season didn't even hit our shores until, I think it was a year and a half after American audience had seen it. It rated like shit. It didn't get any ratings.
That's because everybody watched it online.
Everybody was already on season two.
Yeah.
You know, it was ridiculous. And so now they call it, what is it, fast tracking? And yeah, it's showing 24 hours after the American audience. By then, it's already up on PrimeWire, and I've watched it anyway. It's just like Sunday night rolls around for you guys. You go off to bed. I wait 3 hours, and then all the programs that I want to watch in America come out on PrimeWire. But they won't be in Australia until, you know, Monday, Tuesday afternoon if I wanted to get it legit.
It is interesting.
One of you fuckers wrecking the whole storyline for me.
Well, you know, you think about it. With digital distribution, there's really no reason to region lock anything anymore. I mean, I'm not even sure what the original reason was to do that, except just to make more money. But
more money.
Yeah.
I mean,
there was definitely for North America and Asia and stuff like that where we had NTSC. No, we got PAL, and you guys had NTSC.
Yeah, we actually had different formats on the television. But
yeah,
today,
that was a reason, but today there shouldn't be.
Well, and you know, when you actually had to physically ship tapes and discs, I could see a bit of a delay hitting, you know, Europe, Australia, places like that, because you have to physically get the stuff there. You know what I mean?
It's all just designed to extract the maximum amount of money.
Oh,
that's,
I'm sure.
That's all it is.
Why they're losing money on it.
They're only losing money on paper. Because no matter how much money they make, it's always going to be losing money.
But Morps, you were talking about region locking. And this actually was a conversation I had last night. These people were complaining for Christmas that their UK relatives had sent them all these DVDs.
And they couldn't watch any of them. Yeah.
And I'm like, why can't you watch them? They're like, a DVD player doesn't. Well, okay, take your laptop, connect it to the HDMI cable to the TV. Change interface, connect to the HDMI, put it in Windows Movie Player. Then when it says the region is locked, go unlock that region. You get four chances, and then you just uninstall and then reinstall. Or download a player that plays all regions.
I believe VLC ignores a region, doesn't it?
Yes, VLC works. Then I think alcohol lets you unencrypt and re-encrypt.
But they're not exactly... clever like that. So, I just stuck with the whole you can watch it with, you know, doing that with Windows Media Player.
Well, there used to be a big market for DVD players that had been region unlocked so they'd play anything. I don't know if that's still the case or not.
I think PlayStation 2 that was the first one to play DVDs?
Yeah, I think
so. Yeah, mine's not region locked. And I can't remember whether I unlocked it or not.
First gen, I don't think was.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think if you've got the first gen ones, then you're laughing.
And what locked the Xbox wasn't actually the driver, it was the attachment you had to buy to play DVDs
dongle.
On it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the dongle.
Funny. You remember when I was modding those Xboxes and we figured out we found the software that would play DVDs without the dongle?
Yes.
That was hilarious.
Like, awesome, I'm never going to have to buy batteries for this crappy remote that has numbers on it that I'm never going to fucking use. It shouldn't have had anything more than a play button, a rewind, and a fast forward, and a pause.
All right.
It would be skipped now.
Next story up is from The Register. Malware writers are using the Pastebin web application to host backdoor code. Researcher Dennis Sinzguko suggests the code sharing website was used to store code that was later tapped in attacks against websites running vulnerable instances of the popular RevSlider plugin. Senguko, a Sucre staffer known for his white hat malware analysis blog Unmask Parasites, said that the use of Pastebin as a remote server for malcode in many detected live attacks is common. Technically, the criminals used Pastebin for what it was built for, to share code snippets. The only catch is that the code is malicious and is used in illegal activity directly off the Pastebin website. This time, we see relatively massive use of Pastebin in live attacks, which is quite new to us. The code injected in the content of a Base64 encoded temp variable in a WordPress core, blah, 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 blah. A warning to fellow malware-busting community not to share malcode on Pastebin, as doing so could serve as a content server for attackers. Pastebin worked well as it allows attackers to download code in raw format. It was so effective that Indonesian hacker Father Freaks of the Yogyakarta Black Hat has crafted the PHP encryptor. So now here's the kicker. Most businesses have no legitimate reason to allow Pastebin, according to RSA bod Kevin Fielder. In April 2013, he reported on malware that used the clipboard to dump Base64 executables as text on the site was then used in password-stealing malware. Fielder detected the malware decoding text inside his sandboxes. The bottom line is to block access to Pastebin, as there's no valid enterprise use of the site that wouldn't introduce significant risk, he said. If you can't block it, keep an eye on what people are downloading from it.
Let's say I'm working where I live on some code. Let's say I actually know how to code and want to make a really awesome first-person shooter. And Big is also helping me with this. I'm not driving fucking hundreds of miles to collaborate. I can load my shit on Pastebin, and he can see it.
I agree. I was getting ready to lampoon the idea of blocking Pastebin. If you have any developers in-house, Pastebin is a fantastic resource. It is very useful, and there are hundreds of clones of it now. So this concept of, well, we should just block that because malware uses it, well, malware runs on Windows. Maybe we should just put everyone on Linux or Mac or, I don't know, Amiga.
Malware runs on the internet. You gotta be careful. We need to go shoot AT&T and burn it down.
No, just physically cut all your lines. That'll make you secure, right?
What'd you try to say, Suave?
Be careful in what you recommend to somebody. Never, ever recommend something bad in jest thinking that they'll never pick it, because that's always the one they're going to pick.
Kind of like to see the world go back to the Amiga OS, personally.
Someone kill him. Just drag him outside, Madman, and take his head off.
Allah Akbar?
There you go.
Oh, hang on, let me draw a
as a warning to others who come along with stupid fucking ideas like that.
Oh, come on, I like remember the Amiga Morps? OS.
Yeah. He was the guy that wanted everybody to switch back to an Amiga OS.
Yeah, here's his head. On the pike.
Yep. Got any more bright ideas, smartass?
I think we found a sore spot for RU. Joe saw the doll where the Amiga OS touched you, are you?
Manline warriors.
I just want to point out, because someone's using a product legitimately and it hurts you, doesn't mean it's the product's fault. It's the fucking person abusing it.
I know for a fact that Pastebin removed these things fairly quickly when they're pointed out to it. So if you find malware using Pastebin as an attack point, instead of saying, we should block Pastebin, try reporting it to Pastebin and see how quickly they block it. I guarantee you it's pretty quick.
Pastebin liked their good reputation.
All right, last story I have for the night is from Torrent Freak. An anti-piracy company has caused Google to wrongfully remove dozens of GitHub project URLs. Acting on behalf of a porn company, Takedown Piracy asked the search giant to remove the links to several projects, including those owned by Facebook, Netflix, Yahoo, and OpenSUSE. Every single week, thousands of copyright holders and anti-piracy companies demand that Google remove links to allegedly infringing content. The effort required to deal with this deluge is considerable. Google has received as many as 11 million requests in a single week, and in 2014 alone, the search giant processed some, 345 million URL takedowns. While it's believed that most takedown requests are accurate, Google still does its best to ensure that erroneous notices don't negatively affect legitimate online services. Google regularly rejects overbroad and inaccurate notices, but like everyone else, the company is imperfect. The latest headshaker arrived courtesy of anti-piracy outfit Takedown Piracy, acting on behalf of porn outfit Wicked Pictures. TDP sent Google a notice containing thousands of URLs targeting dozens of well-known and lesser-known file-sharing websites. Sadly, also in the notice, also targeted coding site GitHub over and over again, and Google complied. The material reported in this notice are copyrighted DVD videos of Wicked Pictures, the notice begins. Two URLs targeted, github.com/yahoo/pure and github.com/yahoo/pure/releases belong to the pure.css project, described as a set of small responsive CSS modules that you can use in every web project. Pure.css is owned by Yahoo. Apparent reason for the takedown, Wicked has a movie titled Impure Hunger.
Wow.
So they used Google and just did a weird search string to find anything out there with...
And then send all anything that came back. Like, you know,
that's how they did this.
Yeah, anytime you punch anything into Google, you know, it always comes back, you know, your 36 million responses or whatever.
Yeah, they've just taken the last 10 pages and decided to throw some accusations around. That's fucking ridiculous, man. Google need to pull their fucking head out of their asses and have a look at policy and procedures.
What's going to happen here is all of, like, the big-name search engines that comply with all of these types of requests are essentially just going to start to have less and less content indexed.
Yeah.
And eventually we're going to reach a point where there's going to be some search engine in, like, China or something like that. Like, fuck, maybe everybody's going to go start using Baidu now. Well, maybe China's a bad example, but...
DuckDuckGo, man. Let's use DuckDuckGo.
Yeah, okay.
God, I hate that name.
I know. It's such a bad name.
Sort of see how it happened too, like the three CEOs coming up with the company. Yeah, they just get doing bong rip after bong rip trying to figure out the name of this thing. And the same thing happened with Galaxy 15. They woke up in the morning, it was registered that way, and they went, fuck.
That's actually not terribly far off. Except
that's I'm thinking how DuckDuckGo got drunk.
I got drunk during a Sean Kennedy show and then woke up the next morning owning a domain. It's like, well, I got to do something with it now. So
yep.
Here we are.
That's how I'm thinking DuckDuckGo started.
Probably. I think they should just start ignoring those. It's like, if these URLs are committing piracy, sue them.
They
take
can't.
Them to fucking court.
I understand this stuff because I used to deal with it. They actually cannot ignore them because... Any quote unquote good faith DMCA takedown notices, if you start ignoring them, you lose what's called the safe harbor provision or protections of the DMCA. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act basically says if you're a hosting provider, you cannot be sued for the actions of your customers as long as you make a good faith effort to comply with takedown notices. The moment you say we just don't deal with those, they can actually sue you for linking to the content. Which I honestly think linking to content is the stupidest thing in the world to be sued for, but apparently they can.
What needs to be done is make it to have consequences to file false accusations.
Well, the law has them, but it's so weighted, it's not even funny.
Do you want to do this one, Madman, or do you want me?
I want to switch to a loser pay system when it comes to lawsuits. And if you send in an erroneous takedown notice, you owe the company like $100,000 a day in missed profits, even if it's an unprofitable company, just like there. That would limit the number of takedown notices to actual legitimate takedown notices.
I have got such a plan now for setting up websites with certain names.
I want
it. Yeah, but if you did it that way, it would stop people reporting their piracy.
Yeah, it would totally backfire. Because
I'm just going for the feminism idea here. Of, you know, if you cry rape, then you should be held responsible for your actions of crying rape.
Wow. Go ahead, BZ.
Not gonna say anything after that.
Brain not working.
No, and... just the way it was presented, man. I just could see the argument in court being presented the same way feminists with, no, you've got to let everybody cry rape. As loud as they want, whenever they want. And if nothing happens, comes of it, then what the hell? Walk away. No hard feelings. Yeah, buddy over there's life's destroyed, but at least I'm empowered.
Man, that our broadcast box is struggling tonight.
I like it. It's got more personality now. Yeah, a bit like Crichton, you know, from Red Dwarf. The robot insanity. We relabel that machine, Smeghead.
That's a good one.
Well, I am going to be rebuilding it when I get some new parts in, because I think the parts that are in it are dying. You can only smack it on the side until it stops making noise so many times.
Mm. I nominate the new box be called Smeghead.
I'm not opposed to this.
I think it.
All right. Ground control shall henceforth be known as Smeghead. Got it. We'll take care of that when the parts come in Tuesday, I believe. Anyways, so for what I got for Digital Dojo tonight is awesome. It's from cs.unm.edu, tilde dlchno/flake/doom. I'm reading the full URL because this is fun. I am proposing a new mapping for managing system loads. As mentioned above, people frequently talk about blowing processes away, and the Unix command line to destroy a process is kill. This suggests a metaphor for process management. Each process can be a monster, and the machines that can be represented as a series of rooms. ID Software has generously released the source code for Doom, which has been ported to Linux. The author of the blog post downloaded one of the many versions and added a few lines of code that would spawn a new soldier for each process, re-nice the process when it's wounded, and kill the process when it dies. This is its system administration via Doom.
Awesome.
And the code is posted on the website. He literally modified a version of Doom so that processes would show up as the shotgun guy in rooms. And if you killed a if you killed a shotgun guy in Doom, it would kill the process on the server.
That's an amazing idea.
You know, he told so many people who didn't understand this. He was so happy about it, and they just looked at him with a blank face.
Yeah, kind of, actually.
You know, it's one of those breakthrough things where if you're into all that, that's really cool. But if you're not, you're like, why bother?
So
I think it's super cool, though.
He's got some potential benefits for using Doom as a tool for system administration. Machine load is immediately apparent to the player, who can see how crowded a room is. The player can eyeball many machines from a high vantage point and then go down into a room that needs maintenance. There is a nice continuum for resource allocation. A user may choose to simply wound processes rather than kill them, which could naturally be translated to re-nicing them. A new sysadmin could be given less power by giving them a smaller weapon. A rank beginner may not be given a weapon at all and be forced to attack processes with their bare hands. It would take a foolhardy player to attack a room full of monsters, just as a newbie should not kill a bunch of important processes. A more experienced sysadmin would have time to stop a newbie who is trying to kill the wrong process. The real work could be left to those with the big guns. The truly great sysadmins could get BFGs.
Just when you thought sysadmins couldn't get any gayer, they come up with this.
I think a BFG is a bit non-precise weapon.
Really crowded systems would regulate on their own because monsters occasionally kill each other.
Wow. Great for system stability, by the way.
Once the population in a room goes down, the monsters will stop attacking each other. Drastic action takes work. In a command line interface, all actions take approximately the same amount of effort. One can ls just as easily as they can rm-rf*, which is kind of unfortunate. In a cyberspace environment, the players are not omnipotent, so performing large actions takes time and effort. Important processes can be instantiated as more powerful monsters. They can then defend themselves against inexperienced sysadmins.
Whoops, I just had a great idea, man. I had a great idea. Okay, so you have two systems equal, two different operators, but they're in each other's system, and they have to try and take each other out before the other guy.
Sysadmins.
So you have to locate and knock out the best processes to take down their system.
Sysadmins could cooperate or compete. Doom is a natural environment for player-to-player interaction. A team of players can cooperate to take down care of a heavily loaded system, or they can even take out rogue sysadmins who are killing the wrong processes. And then there's Kevin. Some downsides he came up with here. Certain processes are vital to the computer's operation and should not be killed. For example, after he took the screenshot of himself being attacked by CSH, CSH was shot by friendly fire from behind, possibly by TCSH or XV, and then his session was abruptly terminated. So he was trying not to kill his shell, and his shell died anyways.
Wow, this reads like Braille porn for the blind and gifted.
Oh, baby. Oh, baby. Mapping processes to appropriate monsters is difficult. Should large processes be mapped to large monsters? Should the monster type reflect the CPU as well as memory usage? Should processes and their children look alike? And finally, it's difficult to tell if your employees are doing real work or just goofing off when the tools in the games have the same GUI.
No, I'm not playing Doom. Wait a minute. I'm actually playing Doom.
I can see people getting going to kill a couple processes and then getting sidetracked and having an epic battle and like taking out half the company without doing it. Sorry, collateral damage, guys. Got a little out of hand.
We had to kill the cyber demon, man. I mean, what the hell were we supposed to do? How was I supposed to know that that was our accounting software?
It was shooting me.
Shooting at me. Your accounting software was shooting at me. I've played Tron, man. I know how that shit ends.
So, no. So what you actually need to do now is a way to deploy this onto other people's systems, and then you can actually hack like it's in the movies.
No! What you need to do is crack Sony, load Doom onto their system, and then throw up a free server.
I'm seeing a Metasploit module now. I'm seeing a Metasploit module in the future of this.
Wow. Hey guys, want to play a game? 13
like
financial
game?
Industries fell over today, and no one knows how.
They just don't know why.
We kept finding Doom executables all over the place. It's the strangest thing. John Carmack was quoted as saying, shrug.
I'm kind of curious at what would happen if you set up a machine with lots of stuff and just have it not all fight itself.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Occasionally, you'd have a process kill the wrong process and the whole thing just goes down.
Well, I'm wondering if you do it enough times, can you use Doom to make an AI?
We need odds on this for Vegas, man. Six computers going at it, you know. With the last one living, we could gamble on this. Look, processes going after each other.
What will go down first? NORAD, the Fed, the World Trade Organization.
Oh, or Sony. God. All right. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Some cases always is more definitive than others. Pure decking every Friday, or in this case Saturday, because I lost track of what day it was. That's actually true. Damn. Laura's doing shows all over the stream. He's got shows on Thursdays. He's got shows on... No, I'm sorry. He's on Tuesdays. Tuesdays and occasionally Saturdays. Of course, the Galaxy 15 radio site, the Twitter handle, the feedback forum, the subreddit. And, you know, worst case scenario, it just finds Sard. He'll be the one at the bar drinking alone, crying into his drink. Just hand him a message. We'll get it.
And one more thing, the Intimidation Game, new movie, check it out.
No, Sard.